नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
A devotee must execute his prescribed duties, which are glorious, without material profit, without excessive violence. One should regularly perform one's devotional activities. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One has to execute his prescribed duties according to his social position as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. The prescribed duties of the four classes of men in human society are also described in Bhagavad Gita. The activities of Brahmins are to control the senses and to become simple, clean, learned devotees. The Kshatriyas have the spirit for ruling. They are not afraid on the battlefield, and they are charitable. The Vaishyas, or the mercantile class of men, trade in commodities, protect cows, and develop agricultural produce. The Shudras, or laborer class, serve the higher classes because they themselves are not very intelligent. From every position, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Svakarmanatham Abhyarchya, one can serve the Supreme Lord by performing one's prescribed duties. It is not that only the Brahmins can serve the Supreme Lord and not the Shudras. Anyone can serve the Supreme Lord by performing his prescribed duties under the direction of a spiritual master or representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one should think that his prescribed duties are inferior. A Brahmin can serve the Lord by using his intelligence, and the Kshatriya can serve the Supreme Lord by using his military arts, just as Arjuna served Krishna. Arjuna was a warrior. He had no time to study Vedanta or other highly intellectual books. The damsels of Brajdham were girls born of the Vaishya class, and they engaged in protecting cows and producing agriculture. Krishna's foster father, Nanda Maharaj, and his associates were all Vaishyas. They were not at all educated, but they could serve Krishna by loving him and by offering everything to him. Similarly, there are many instances in which Chandalas, or those lower than Shudras, have served Krishna. Also, the sage Vidura was considered a Shudra because his mother happened to be a Shudra. There are no distinctions, for it is declared by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita that anyone engaged specifically in devotional service is elevated to the transcendental platform, position, without doubt. Everyone's prescribed duty is glorious if it is performed in devotional service of the Lord, without desire for profit. Such loving service must be performed without reason, without impediment, and spontaneously. Krishna is lovable, and one has to serve him in whatever capacity one can. That is pure devotional service. Another significant phrase in this verse is nati himshena, with minimum violence or sacrifice of life. Even if a devotee has to commit violence, it should not be done beyond what is necessary. Sometimes the question is put before us, You ask us not to eat meat, but you are eating vegetables. Do you think that is not violence? The answer is that eating vegetables is violence, and vegetarians are also committing violence against other living entities because vegetables also have life. Non-devotees are killing cows, goats, and so many other animals for eating purposes, and a devotee who is vegetarian is also killing. But here, significantly, it is stated that every living entity has to live by killing another entity. That is the law of nature. Jivo jivasya jivanam. One living entity is the life for another living entity. But for a human being, that violence should be committed only as much as necessary. A human being is not to eat anything which is not offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yagyashishtashanashanto. One becomes freed from all sinful reactions by eating foodstuffs which are offered in yagya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee, therefore, eats only prasad, or foodstuffs offered to the Supreme Lord. And Krishna says that when a devotee offers him foodstuffs from the vegetable kingdom, with devotion, he eats that. A devotee is to offer to Krishna foodstuffs prepared from vegetables. If the Supreme Lord wanted foodstuffs prepared from animal food, the devotee could offer this, but he does not order to do that. We have to commit violence. That is a material law. We should not, however, commit violence extravagantly, but only as much as ordered by the Lord. Arjuna engaged in the art of killing, and although killing is, of course, violence, he killed the enemy simply on Krishna's order. In the same way, if we commit violence as it is necessary by the order of the Lord, that is called nati hingsha. We cannot avoid violence, for we are put into a conditional life in which we have to commit violence, but we should not commit more violence than necessary or than ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 29, entitled Explanation of Devotional Service, Text Number 15. I am very grateful for the good fortune to be amongst all of you once again in the holy land of Nutwarka. Thank you for your kindness. In this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila Dev is culminating his teachings to his mother Devahuti. Devahuti was in a very favorable situation to open her heart to hear this message. We all know the history. She is daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, who was a great king of the world. She lived in extravagant luxury all of her life, luxury that no one in this world can imagine. Lived in the king's palace, not of a nation, but the world. She was so beautiful, possessed such good qualities that even demigods would fall from their airplanes upon seeing her playing on the roof of her house. When it came time for marriage, Svayambhuva Manu was not thinking in terms of a person of a candidate in regard to their college education, or how much earning power they have, or what kind of house they live in. He was only concerned with one thing, that his daughter would never have to take birth again in this world. Guru nasasyat, svajini nasasyat, pita nasasyat, jadanini nasasyat. The foremost duty of guru and even parent is that the child will learn to love Krishna and never have to suffer another birth in this material world. And every other consideration is to facilitate that. So he decided to marry her to Kardama Muni, who lived in the jungle. He had no possessions. He was performing severe austerities. So Devahuti moved into the jungle from a palace to the forest. Wonderful. And being a very devoted wife, she assisted her husband in such ways. She didn't feel comfortable to eat unless it was with her husband after serving him nicely. But the problem is, he practically never ate. He would be doing tapasya and meditation, samadhi, sometimes for days and months at a time. She never complained. Just very faithfully, lovingly served the Lord, assisted her husband. And after some time, her most beautiful body became pale, emaciated. Her wonderful silken hair became matted. She was just wearing the tattered bark of a forest dweller. And Kardama Muni saw that she's doing so much just to please me. He wanted to reciprocate and give her children. But how do you give children in a situation like that? It was just so much in the mode of goodness that there just wasn't the inclination for children. So Prabhupada often quotes, what was his power? Just by the chanting of mantra, he created a mansion that could fly in the sky. Not like these jumbo 747 jets. It was actually a palace with gardens and lakes and beautiful servants and maidservants. It was wonderful. And it could go any planet. We may think that is impossible. It is impossible for us, but for a great yogi like Kardama Muni, it is quite natural. So in this situation, it was very suitable. And first they had 9 daughters and then son. And the son was avatar of Lord Vishnu, Kapila Dev. After Kardama Muni performed his duties in this way, he left again for the forest and left his wife under the care of son Kapila, who was properly grown up. And Kapila is also going to go to the forest. But before going, he is instructing his mother on transcendental knowledge. So this particular section of Bhagavatam is a series of questions and answers between mother and child. The Sankhya philosophy describes in great authoritative detail the nature of this material existence, how it is working, why it is working. Also, it describes the nature of the soul, the nature of God, the nature of karma, the nature of time. All things that are relevant and necessary to understand for self-realization are being explained by Kapila to Devahuti. And after very, very scientifically examining the nature of this creation and the various processes of yoga or purification, culminates with the explanation of devotional service. Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, Krishna also describes various forms of yoga, but his conclusion is the same conclusion as Kapila Dev. Yoginam api sarvesham madgitenantaratmana sharavan vajateyomam same yuktatamamataha. That of all yogis, one who abides in me with great faith, one who is my devotee, is most intimately united in yoga and is the highest of all. In previous verses in this chapter, Kapila Dev has described how the pure devotee of the Lord, who has no selfish ambitions, no false ego, doesn't ask anything from the Lord except service. Salokya sarasti samipya sarupya katvam apyata diyamanam nagrinanti vinamets matsevanam jata. Even the four types of liberation a devotee does not care for. The devotee is only concerned with pleasing the Lord and serving the Lord. This is a very, very deep, profound principle, which is very rare to find. Pure devotional service is so rare. Most people approach God or the demigods because they want to improve their material capacity to enjoy by wealth, health, prestige, good family. Others worship the Lord because they want mystic powers, so they could be very great amongst men. Anima, Mahima, Prapti, Ishita, Ashita, Prakamya. These mystic powers by which we can perform feats where people will worship us, honor us, even as God. Others worship the Lord for salvation, freedom of sin, and their reactionary sufferings. Others worship God for liberation, in existence forever, in the impersonal Brahman. Others worship the Lord because they want elevation to Vaikuntha, to have the same type of form of the Lord, to live in the same planet as the Lord, to have the same type of opulences of the Lord. But a pure devotee does not care for any of these benedictions. A pure devotee simply wants to please the Lord. A pure devotee, very humble, will carry on his or her prescribed duties in this world, knowing that there is no high or low in the eyes of God, in terms of material calculation or position. Everything is based on our spirit of devotion. Bhagavatam explains that whatever one's occupation may be, atapum bhidvijastreshtas varana shrama vivagasha svanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritoshana. Its success is if we please Krishna. If through our efforts we do not please Krishna, it is a failure. Whatever the world says. Therefore, devotees are not impressed simply by material opulences or great success. A devotee knows real success is to please Krishna. And Krishna is bhavagrahi. He is pleased by our sincerity, by our motivation, by the purpose in which we do whatever we do. Krishna sees from within the heart. He doesn't see simply what we do. He sees how we do it, and especially why we do it. And there are so many fantastic examples of this within the scriptures, within history. King Prataparudra, he was a king of Orissa, but his aspiration was just to be a humble, menial street sweeper for the Lord. And that is what melted the Lord's heart. Because actually, even when he was ruling the state, he was doing it in the spirit of just a menial street sweeper. There was no difference to him whether he was mobilizing armies whether he was taxing the citizens or whether he was sweeping the street with a broom. It's all service. It is all for the pleasure of the Lord. We know a story in Krishna book, Srimad Bhagavatam, when Lord Krishna went to Mithila. Mithila is the birthplace of Sita, the consort of Sri Ram. Very holy place. Have any of you ever been there? Sure, somebody has been. Very nice. It is in Nepal today. Very beautiful place. I don't know what it's like today, but I was there 32 years ago. Did I ever tell that story? Yes? It's a very nice place. At least it was. I heard it's changed now. But at that time, so quaint, so simple, that there were no roads with cars or trucks. Instead of trucks, they used elephants. There would be traffic jams of elephants. But those traffic jams were very nice. There's big elephants, and on top of the elephant would be tied a huge basket where they would carry heavy loads. And then the elephant driver would be sitting on the head of the elephant, just behind his head, with a little stick. It was usually a little boy. And all the elephants would have big bells around their necks. Vroom, vroom, vroom. And they would just walk very gracefully. So nice. Very peaceful place. So when Krishna went there, there was a king. Because previously it was a vast kingdom. At the time of Rama, it was the kingdom of Janak Maharaj. Beautiful palaces, wonderful, wonderful facilities. That's where Ram married Sita. That's where he broke the bow of Lord Shiva. So when Krishna went there, there was a king named Bahulaswa, who was a descendant of Janak Maharaj. And he came to greet Krishna at the outskirts, invited Krishna to come to his palace to be his special honored guest. At the same time, there was a very poor Brahmin named Shutadev. And he invited Krishna, come to my hut and be my special guest. So, we know when we have two invitations and we don't have much time, it's difficult. We want to please everyone. We don't want to offend anyone. But somehow or other, to please someone in this world means you displease someone else. That's just the way life is. If you become a devotee, so many people are discouraged and displeased with you. And if you don't become a devotee, so many people are discouraged with you. So what to do? We should do what's right. So Krishna, he doesn't have this problem. He simply expanded himself into two forms and simultaneously went to the palace of Bahulaswa and the little straw hut of Shutadev. In the palace, Bahulaswa brought Krishna elegant feast served on gold and silver platters. And Shutadev, he offered the best he could. He brought Krishna a little rice that he begged on a leaf plate. Bahulaswa decorated his royal, opulent palace for Krishna and gave him a bejeweled throne to sit upon. And Shutadev brought Krishna in his little straw hut and gave him a straw mat on the floor to sit on. Bahulaswa had entertainment, the best dancers and musicians performing for Krishna. And Shutadev, he danced for Krishna himself and sang. Just started jumping up and dancing. Bahulaswa had Krishna fanned with elegant chamaras. And Shukadev just had his chatter and was fanning Krishna like this. So from a material point of view, there was a vast difference. But for Krishna, there was no difference at all. Because Bahulaswa, a Hasta in such a high position, was actually offering with pure devotion to Krishna. And so was Shukadev. So Krishna saw both as equal. He didn't discriminate. One is high and one is low. One is great and one is small. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti prayachchati. Krishna sees the quality of our devotion. That's really all he sees. That's all he cares about. Everything else is superficial. Whatever we do for Krishna is a means to express the sincerity of our devotion. Srila Prabhupada, he would be so pleased when one devotee would open a big temple. And he'd be also very pleased if a devotee just made a nice chapati that puffed up for him. He was seeing the devotion. He was seeing the sincerity as Krishna's representative. Because when Prabhupada engaged us, he engaged us to please Krishna. By pleasing Guru, we please Krishna. Therefore, Guru is always teaching us what pleases Krishna. And what pleases Krishna is our sincerity and our devotion. In the Leela of Sri Ram, when Ramchandra was going, when he was exiled, he came to the Nishada race, King Guha. Yes, living in the forest. Now, Nishadas are untouchable outcasts by social conceptions. But he offered Ram his whole kingdom. What was his kingdom? Ram left Ayodhya. And this kingdom is just living in jungles. Very, very primitive life. But Ram said, no, I cannot go in your kingdom because I have given my word to Kaikeyi, I will not enter into any kingdoms. Not even a forest kingdom. So he just made some straw bed for Ram out of just weeds and grass and Sita. And he became one of the very, very dearmost associates and devotees of Ram, because of his devotion. So this is very important to understand. We should never judge a person by external situations alone. We must understand their sincerity, because that is what Krishna sees. And if someone is pleasing Krishna, even if they're making mistakes by material calculation, if we judge them, offend them, or criticize them, that will be marked against us by the Lord within our heart. So we have to be very careful. But it is a great trap that the tendency, even on the path of bhakti, is to see things by material calculations. To think that success is getting a position. Success is getting facilities. And somebody with high position and high facilities is advanced. But it is not necessarily so. We have seen people with high facilities and high positions, they go down because they become proud and they make offenses. And some devotees just doing some menial, simple service year after year after year without concern for any aggrandizement or facilities. They just carry on their nice little service and they just leave this world as great saints and go back to Godhead. So, of course, within society, there has to be people who have high positions and who are given facilities. But that is external. What is important is simply the sincerity of our devotion, our humility, our willingness to please Krishna. That is what is all important. So whatever one's occupational duty, whatever one's position in society, everyone has equal opportunity to go back to Godhead if they're just sincere, if they just surrender to the will of Krishna. And the second point that Prabhupada brings out in this verse is that we should perform our duties with minimal violence to others. And Prabhupada explains that you cannot survive without violence. Just breathing air, there's violence, because there's little unseen creatures that get swallowed by us and killed. And sometimes just walking, there's violence. I listened to one tape where Prabhupada is explaining how Krishna's everywhere. He's in and between every atom. That means he's even in the floor. So we're walking on top of Krishna. So how can we not offend Krishna? I mean, when we go to the toilet, I mean, Krishna's in between the atoms of the water too, within that. I don't want to get into details. But Krishna's everywhere, as the Paramatma, is he not? So, God, what do we do? We know it's a great offense to step over someone, what to speak of step on someone. So Krishna's in the floor, and we're walking on him, we're dancing on him. So Prabhupada explains, you can't not. Anything you do is offensive, unless Krishna sees you're doing it to serve him. If you're just walking, you're making aparads. But if you're walking for Krishna, to do something for Krishna, then Krishna's happy, Krishna's pleased, Krishna's very, very satisfied to have you walking on top of his Paramatma feature, because you're going to do devotional service for him. So if we're not performing devotional service, we're making offenses. That is the nature of the world we live in. And as far as other living entities who are all part and parcel of Krishna, from the spiritual point of view, every living entity is a fragmental part of God, like a ray of the sun of Krishna. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If we want to chant the name constantly, we must learn to respect all living entities and not expect respect for oneself. But in this world, violence is necessary. Jiva jiva sajivanam. So here it is explained that for our devotional service to be pleasing to Krishna, we must minimize that violence as far as possible. And Prabhupada describes in this wonderful purport that some people challenge, it is a common challenge, that you are vegetarians. You are against the eating of meat, but you have to kill vegetables to eat, to be a vegetarian. Actually, many vegetables you don't have to kill. You just cut them or pick them or whatever. But sometimes you do kill. But Krishna, who is all merciful, he provides an arrangement where if we pick vegetable and cook it, some of those vegetables, they have a very low state of consciousness on the chain of spiritual evolution. So therefore, they're not as conscious. They don't feel the pain as acutely. They don't prize their life to the extent of a more developed species. So therefore, the violence is minimized. Who was it? The inventor of Kellogg's company, his name was Mr. Kellogg, J.H. Kellogg, I think. He actually invented these Kellogg's cornflakes and everything because he was a very strong proponent of vegetarianism. He was trying to give alternatives to people. And he had a very simple way to discriminate what to eat and what not to eat. Would you like to hear? He said, if it runs away, don't eat it. Right? A fish will swim away. An animal will run away. They'll fight for its life as much as you or your children. Now, vegetables also like their life, but they're not developed enough. So it's minimal violence. And Krishna will accept food that is offered with that minimal violence. And because it's offered to Krishna, the spirit soul in that vegetable becomes elevated. Its life is being offered to Krishna for Krishna's satisfaction. And then it's being chewed by the Vaishnavas. That's glorious, is it not? Krishna accepts it because it's offered with love. But he will not accept what creates unnecessary violence. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that there are many types of violence. Another type of violence is if you can help somebody by elevating their consciousness, but you don't, that is violence. So really, preaching or enlightening people in the message of Krishna consciousness is the essence of nonviolence. Otherwise, if people carry on without knowledge of God, without knowledge of the soul, performing various karmic activities, we're allowing them to create violence to themselves. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed in one beautiful song, praising Lord Nityananda, that the essence of all religion is to show compassion to other living beings by distributing the holy name of God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And I do not want to create violence upon you by going over time, so I will end here. Any comments anyone would like to make? Yes, Bhrigu Patiji Prabhu.
This narration that we're listening to did take place approximately 2 billion years ago, beginning of the day of dawn, or way back, and beginning of Lord Brahma's lifetime, about 1 billion years ago.
Would anyone like to answer that question? It happened a long time ago. Yes.
There are different opinions on that one, so I won't get to that. I had another question. At the very beginning of your lecture, you mentioned that when Swayamvara got linked to Mary Jayakuti, he wasn't considering college education or earning power like that. But, you know, the parents of today were probably shivering when they hear that, because here's Prabhupada Mahuti. You know, he's living in the course, he's already, you know, realized the movie, so there's no question of using it anymore. And at the same time, when it's time to give a facility, by chanting mantras, as you say, you know, you're here for the facility. So they don't have such devotees to choose from. So maybe they have to be more concerned about level of education and earning power. So what do you say about that?
You know better than me. Well, these are considerations, but what is important is the prime consideration. These are all considerations, and they are relevant, because after all, you know, people have to survive. We don't want our daughter to be, you know, scrapping in the streets. We want them to be happy. Yes? But all of these concerns, education, earning power, and so forth, they're only to facilitate the purpose of life. And that's the most important priority. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the lessons are often taught in very, very clear and extreme ways to teach us. Yes?
factually, Devahuti lived for years and years and years as an ascetic. Yes, happily. And she was satisfied ultimately within her heart because she knew she was on the path back home, back to Godhead. But at the same time, she had that motherly instinct. She wanted a child. Yes? But do you think that an ordinary woman who wants an ordinary child, God is going to appear within her womb? Her desire for a child was devotional service. Krishna says in Gita, sex life to procreate God-conscious children, he is none different than that act. That is devotional service. So Devahuti's intention was service to the Lord. And therefore, Kardama Muni, when he built that beautiful, incredible aerial mansion, it was all to facilitate his wife's devotional service. So yes, Srimad Bhagavatam teaches things very, very, because we're dealing with very extraordinary personalities. But the lessons must be understood in such a way that they apply to our level. Obviously, there's not too many Kardama Munis on the planet today who can do that.
Yeah?
That is a very relevant observation. There's not that many Devahutis or Kardama Munis today. But just because we can't be like that, it doesn't mean we can't learn from what they're trying to teach us. Shukadev Goswami extracted those episodes in history that are for the ultimate welfare of humanity to learn from. Munaya sadupristoham bhavadbir lokamangalam yatkrita krishna samprasno yenatma supraseedati. The whole Bhagavatam, every narration is glorious because the message is for the ultimate welfare of all living beings. And therefore, we must learn from Guru of Parampara. And Prabhupada, in his purports, is teaching us what is relevant to apply to our life from this incredible story. Yes? And what is it? Prabhupada is explaining herein that our priority should be self-realization. Atato brahma jikyasa. Human life is meant for self-realization. And therefore, every consideration should be to facilitate self-realization. Does that answer your question? Hari Hari. Actually, this is many other marriages we find in Bhagavatam where they do astrologies and they do, they marry, you know, queens to, or princesses to other great kings. So they're considering everything. They're not always sending their daughters to the jungle. But many do. Even Daksha. Daksha is not all that popular in the Bhagavatam. He's made some aparads, but he was a spiritual person. He believed in some karmakandas, and he didn't like Narada Muni taking all his sons away. You know the story. He had so many sons. But he did not want them to get married until they performed years and years of tapasya, because human life is meant for self-realization. He knew that. He could have immediately got them married, but no, you go out and you perform tapasya and you become spiritually advanced, then you marry and take over, you know, the obligations of the state. But Narada Muni met them out in the forest and told him, you're doing very nice as brahmacharis. Why do you want to change your mind and get in trapped in all these things. So they became brahmacharis. Daksha was not happy with that. So he had another set of sons. And he told his sons, don't go near Narada Muni. And sure enough, Narada Muni appeared and said, your brothers are doing very nice. You should follow in your footsteps of your brothers. So they also became brahmacharis. So Daksha was so angry. He actually cursed Narada Muni. He said, you don't understand. Unless people enjoy materialistic life to their satisfaction and get burned out through the process of gradual elevation, they can't renounce properly. You are cheating our sons. You are destroying the principles of religion by taking these young people and giving them renunciation. He cursed Narada. He can't stay in any one place. And then after that, he only had daughters. Because he knew Narada Muni wouldn't do anything like that. But then Daksha, he regretted what he said to Narada Muni, but still he only had daughters. But then he married his daughters to great rishis. Not to kings. To rishis. Because he knew that was good for them. Ultimately, he was searching for self-realization. He was just karmakanda. Influenced by materialistic consideration. But there are so many other examples also. So what's really important for a parent is to create an environment where a child could be happy on the path back home, back to Godhead. That is the greatest love and compassion that we can offer. And that is what we could learn from this wonderful story. And we should end here because it is late. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.